Hey everyone, it's Lindsay Rhodes, and I've got a new podcast, the NFL Road Show. Fun and kind of nerdy conversation about the NFL every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I've got some amazing guests that are joining me. I'll be breaking the huddle with the top stories, previewing games. We'll get you set for the weekend fantasy with our Fantasy Friday episodes, and we'll answer some of your questions as well. So subscribe to the NFL Road Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of a Sopranos podcast. As always, my name is Joe Spellman, and this is
Charles Oakley,
and this is
Charles Oakley the second,
my son. Nobody knows about him, but he exists.
And I am Anthony Mason from the grave. Oh,
God. Jesus.
I'm sorry. We are a Sopranos podcast. I don't know. I was thinking, like, what's the height in there? You know,
sure.
And unfortunately,
you had to go with a dead person.
Our guest just dropped off. I wonder why.
Our guest is a part of the media and does not want to have any affiliation with this episode.
Before we introduce our guest, Dave, you'll introduce him. We are talking about Omar Fu, season 3, episode 12.
Omar
Fu, whatever.
He's not until the next episode. Omar Fu from The Wire.
He's Omar Fu coming.
He's in the next step.
Omar Fu. I know French. I actually know French.
I think so. Tony pronounced it better than you did.
Anyway, Dave, go ahead and introduce our guests.
Nothing but illustrious guests. We have this week a real gentleman, the darling of Nick's Twitter, the pride of Long Island. As he would say to start his own podcast, the Knicks Film School podcast, the most beloved Knicks podcast, in my opinion. John, how the hell are you?
Your opinion's the only one that matters, Dave. Multiple time guest on the Knicks Film School podcast, might I add. Right. I thought I was coming on here to discuss Mofo. I thought that was the name. No, that's not the. Okay.
That's not.
I love
people,
that.
Some people call it that.
Mofo.
We can talk about some mofos.
I'm honored to be on, really, seriously. Maybe you guys are going to bring it up. This was a special request when you first told me about this podcast. I'm like, oh, when you get to this episode, you got to have me on.
Yes. And that was when we were in season one. So we have waited a long time to have the great Jonathan Macri on. Thanks for coming on, brother.
Called it ahead of time. I'm curious, obviously this is probably your favorite episode, but can you articulate what it is about this episode that made you so eager to jump on with us here?
Sure. It's a weird episode, right? Like the one after, it's like, you know, I was trying to think of like a basketball analogy because I have a Knicks podcast. It's
sure.
like the 94-95 Knicks being your favorite Knicks team. It's like, you know, they went to the finals in 93-94. Pine Barrens you want to say Pine Barrens is the greatest hour of television, modern television? I'm not going to argue with you.
You could make an argument for that. Sure.
Yeah. Sure enough, I like the episode after it. It's my favorite episode of the show. I think for me, as great as Pine Barrens is and as great as like so many episodes of the show are, there is something about it pops when Tony is on the screen. And I think you could argue this is a peak Tony episode.
This is his hour for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And that, for me, that's what really brings it home. And specifically when Tony gets into fights and even if we're going to bring in another level, I am just a sucker for a really good argument between a man and a woman.
That scene is, incredible. It's really, really one of the best scenes I think in the show.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm with you after watching these two back to back. I think this is definitely better than Pine Barrens. Yes. I love Pine Barrens. Yeah. I don't really know what my favorite episode is, mm-hmm. but I would definitely say that this one is better. I mean, is, you know, I certainly think I like this one better.
Well, I mean,
Pine Barrens is funnier if it gets remembered for the comedy, right. but this yeah. is more quintessential Sopranos. This yeah. this is like what the rest of the show, this is more indicative of what the rest of the show
also,
is.
Also,
and it's yeah. and it's firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, and the two heavy hitters in the show are Edie Falco and James Gandolfini, and it really shows right. off their talents better than yeah. almost any episode. Maybe Whitecaps is the other episode that
yeah.
shows yeah. off sure. their acting chops the most, especially because it shows it off between the two of them together. But mm-hmm. but this episode just shows off how fucking good they are.
Yes, and it's also, you know, there's, for me, I watch, you know, like you guys, I was in like late high school, college, mm-hmm. you know, when the show came out, so I was already of the age where I could kind of appreciate like the artistic like beauty of the show, and there's some of that here too. Mm-hmm. But also back then, it's like, man, I want to see some people die.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I want to see people get shot.
Yeah,
you know. And this episode has one of those.
No, you're right. I mean, yeah, it's really like everything that Sopranos fans look for in an episode. You could be an episode. Yeah. You could just be there for the violence, and it certainly has that. I think it has maybe like the most intense shootout of the series. For sure, right? Like, what other episode has like a back and forth sort of like shootout action sequence? But then yeah. there's also so many like deep, you could go deep and explore like everything Tony talks about with Melfi.
Whoa.
And really get into
what about when they have the shootout with the Vipers, dude? Come on.
Oh, fuck. I always forget the Vipers and how
can you forget the Vipers?
Come on. Oh, fucking the Vipers.
Intimidating the Vipers are. Oh, we're the Vipers. Yeah, that comes much later. But yeah, let's dive right in. For those of you who don't recall this episode, this is season 3, episode 12, the penultimate episode of season 3, written by David Chase and my boy Frank Renzulli, who I previously erroneously said had left after season 2, but he ducked in here for one of the best episodes of all time. So I'm not going to hear it from you guys about Renzulli today, okay?
Whatever. I mean, but why? Why is he in here? Because he's not like listed as a producer, like you know, like he would be.
Chase knows how to play to people's strengths.
Had to bring him in.
And he said Renzulli, no other.
Yeah.
For this episode, directed by the fantastic Tim Van Patten, originally aired May 13th, 2001. Rounding out my junior year of high school.
That's right.
A little rundown for those who don't remember the episode. Tony and Gloria's relationship comes to a decidedly uncinematic end here. Jackie Jr. and Dino shoot up a card game, and Tony puts Jackie Jr.'s fate in Ralphie's hands. And Carmela, her arc of the season of exploring whether she should stay in this marriage or not, sort of comes to the conclusion that she's going to stay. As long as it benefits her. So kicking it off, you know, this episode really, to me, I realize, is about both Gloria and Jackie Jr. Headed towards self-destruction, right? They're both just like out there making all the wrong decisions, doing all the wrong things. Or in Gloria's case, it's what she wants. But one story kind of ends with a bang and the other with a whimper.
Can we make a quick assumption? If you're at the stage of your relationship where you have to chase after your significant other in a dark parking lot, that may be the first telltale sign.
Hanging up.
Nah, yeah. It's all about the chase. John, it's all about the chase. Come on.
I know many women have chased you down in many a parking
yes,
lot.
Yes,
yes. Dave.
Well, there are a lot of fans of Criminal Minds out there. They just, you know, they want to. Everyone wants a piece, you know.
Everybody wants to make you not an incel, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's the incel guy.
But we open this episode with Carmela and Meadow in a museum. I don't know where they are. Do you guys know that museum?
I assume the Met. I assume that's the Met.
That's what I assumed, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, is it? It might be like supposed to be the Met, but I don't know if they actually shot there or not.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's the Guggenheim.
It's the Goog, though. I know the Goog.
We got that sort of opera song that we heard playing in Pine Barrens when Paulie's in the car and looking out at like the passing countryside of South Jersey, called Sposa So Disprezzata, which means I am the scorned wife, you guys.
Oh,
which
really?
I think, yeah. I think that fits a character in this scene. But she, Carm, yeah, is we quickly learn, spotting. And she's going through some tumultuous emotional times. Why do you guys think they chose that, the mystical marriage of Saint Catherine, that painting with the baby? You guys have like a take on that?
So they can get that line out that she points out that all women marry babies.
Yeah. Right.
And they're also throwing you off that like you might think like we might think that she's pregnant.
Oh, too, because she's spotting and yeah.
Oh yeah.
They talk a lot about that, but you know, obviously,
yeah, right? And she does. She gets like teary eyed with the beautiful, innocent, gorgeous little baby. Who I guess is she likening that to Tony though? When she says we all marry babies, like is she seeing Tony in this painting?
I think she's also yes, and I also think that she thinks she might be pregnant.
I guess, yeah. Okay. All right. Hey.
But she also seems like she.
But then she thinks she has ovarian cancer. Like right. She's
all over the
she's
place.
Definitely a little emotional. You know, so
it also seems like she wants to be pregnant. Like that the scene with the ladies at Artie's.
Mm.
It almost seems like I feel like AJ is getting older. He's like not around. He's at what's his stupid friend's name? Egon whatever the fuck. He's at Egon Spangler's all the time, getting rid of ghosts and
Ghostbusters, another cash cow.
And like Tony's off with Gloria, like he's not around. Like that scene between the two of them when Tony comes home, and she's making the lemon snaps, so awkward because he clearly hasn't been there, and like he's like trying to have a conversation with her, and it's like so fucking awkward. So I think and obviously Meadow's at college, so it might be like empty nest kind of syndrome hitting her hard.
Right. From there we get the little parking garage scene with Tony and Gloria where she has like been following him. She probably knew when Tony had his appointments with Dr. Melfi, right?
Right.
So she stalks him down and they sort of make amends there, even though Tony doesn't really want it, but he's like, I guess gives her some slack because she's like, hey, I've had a rough couple weeks, whatever, which seems normal enough, and later we find out is not normal at all. But in the therapy session with Tony and Melfi, this is where Melfi brings up the concept of amor fou, or Omar fou.
Yeah, Omar fou.
Crazy love.
Omar fou.
All consuming.
Amor fou, that definitely sounds like my relationship, right, babe?
I was gonna
get her on. Let's have a therapy session now with you and your
I was
wife.
Gonna ask you boys because Jonathan is married. I'm married. Joe is married. Golias, you're almost there. You know,
basically married.
Once you grow a pair, you'll be married.
Yeah.
Did you feel when you first met your significant others that it was amor fou? Because I feel like most of the time when it is that all-consuming love, it doesn't work out. You know, it like crashes and burns. It like it's full of passion, full of fire, and then fizzles out.
Crazy enough, I have to say it was. And
God damn
my
you,
God,
John.
How much is my wife gonna get upset if I reveal the backstory of our early goings? what the hell? It was like 1,000% crazy love, and I think the craziness put it on the rocks for a bit, and it was like it teetered, and then we were like on the brink, and then we were like, okay, we got something good here, we gotta get a really, you know, ground in. Thankfully, right. She did not have to come chase me down in the parking lots.
And subsequently, you never body slammed her onto the floor.
That's just on you know, that's for Saturday Night Kick.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm with you. I feel like I'm still in it. I still am.
Shut up, dude.
Joe, you fucking
no,
you
I
romantic
mean, like,
dog.
No,
you.
No. I'm not even saying it from a romantic standpoint. I'm saying it from like it's fucking like crazy being with this bitch. It's like insane, you know. Sometimes it's like it's like insane, or we drive people, you know, we drive each other insane. But yeah,
oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. That's where I took it more.
Sure. Well, there's a difference between like married couples years into a marriage driving each other crazy, and the type of amour fou that Tony. Because how long have they been together at this point? Months, couple months, maybe, right?
Yes.
Were they dating before Thanksgiving? I don't recall.
She goes away for Christmas to Morocco. So we're meant to believe that this is probably like, I don't know, like a month after Christmas or so ish.
Yeah.
And it was cold at the zoo because they were both wearing their, bundled up there. So yeah, a couple months.
Let me just clarify, we've always been driving each other crazy. That's what I'm saying, is that it's been nonstop.
All right. Now Matt, I asked the question.
Spells is doing damage control right now.
I just
want
to make sure we're on... you're on my page here.
I can see Joe's clothing is getting thrown out the window right now. But
your wife is very cleaning. Much not Gloria Trello.
She's cleaning.
Right.
But it is interesting when you think about Tony, because he does, you know, he has this larger than life personality, and so over the first like couple of seasons, his significant others are these like two bit, you know, say the word. You know,
coolers.
You said it, not me. It doesn't feel like they really scratch the itch that he really wants to be scratched. You know, right. And then this makes a lot more sense to me.
Well, he almost says as much. I think it's in a Melfi session in this episode where he's like, "Oh, she knows a lot of shit about a lot of things. She took herself to Morocco." Like,
great line.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah,
Morocco.
Yeah, Morocco. Yeah. Like, but I mean. Arena was certainly not doing that. Yeah, God, classic Renzulli.
Classic.
By the way. I mean, he's looking for that kind of thing, and then we also see it subsequently in his gumas, not all of them, but Valentina, the art dealer. Like, she's a little more like Gloria than she is his other gumas. So it's almost like Tony sort of graduated to like he expects like a higher class of side pieces.
It kind
of
kicks that into gear, because then he chases after Juliana Margulies's Juliana Skiff or whatever.
That's right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It does kind of spark something in his taste in gumars. Right.
You would think maybe Gloria would have like turned him off of it, but from this experience, because it gets pretty intense. I mean, Melfi, she says certain types of people are drawn to fire. You know, they look like moth to a flame, right? And Tony,
that's what I'm saying.
Tony is the flame, just like Spells is the flame.
Spells, stop! You gotta stop, dude. You gotta stop.
That's what I'm saying. You know,
let me ask you this, Joe: Has Ashley ever thrown a side of beef at your neck?
She threw something at me. We we fought each other once on a football Sunday.
You know, boring if you're with somebody who's just like into reading or something. You know, it's like what.
All right, we're moving on from Joe's damage control here.
Joe likes the Spitfire types.
I'm drawn to gambling. I'm drawn to like booze. Like I'm drawn to. I'm drawn.
We
to
get
fire.
It. We get it.
Your you're, wife you're, is an alcoholic blackjack dealer. We get it.
I've had a chicken wing thrown at me. Does that count?
Oh, that counts. That counts.
Where it hit?
Well, it hit like on the shoulder. So.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if I should count it. Anyway, so then we get into Jackie Jr. and Dino. They're kicking up to Ralphie, and they're clearly like positioning themselves to rise up through the ranks. But he lets them know they're not making the cut.
This is like one half a step up from like Bevel Aqua.
there's like quite a few similarities between Bevel Aqua and Sean Gismonte,
right?
But in season two. But that sort of starts that storyline this episode. Then we get Tony and Gloria in bed. We get the never forget a Fez joke. And Gloria starts talking about her sister and how like
she's not allowed to see her kids on Los Angeles. Like the
Santa Monica school.
Oh wow, yeah.
It's always the West Coast, the crazy fucking West Coast.
It feels like David Chase was like, whatever you do when you're writing your script, you cannot talk well of Los Angeles. You must shit on it.
You know,
I mean, I don't Los Angeles.
That's true.
But like, that's true. When she talks about that, like, this is like a probably a dumb name drop, but like, I remember a relative of Joss Whedon discussing the same thing about how his stupid, like, his kids have weird, stupid names and they go to this stupid school in Santa Monica and they talk all like hoity-toity or whatever, flighty.
Christmas is the C word.
It's definitely a real thing.
Well, it's like that Twitter account, Los Feliz Daycare or whatever. It's like, making fun of all the, like, the bourgeois, right, like, woke LA parents.
Right. Yep. They always, yeah, good for getting their jabs in on the West Coast.
Yep.
But yeah, then Gloria starts talking about maybe she'll get lucky and she'll get plastered to a truck grill, which is a hard right turn from
seemed like
a lovely evening.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is someone who has thought about their own suicide.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Some red flags, Tone. But he's like, not, he doesn't want to be, he just wants to be left alone. He doesn't want to hear about anybody's problems. He just wants to see Gloria and her hot body gyrate to little Steven and fuck him. That's basically all he's getting out of this.
Yeah.
We go to the pizza place, which I think is the same pizza place we saw earlier in the season where Jackie almost like had a problem with somebody for smoking in there. And there's like a little tiff between him and some Latino gentleman, tells them to go find a Taco Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets physical and dude, they fucking knocked over like 10 of
dude,
the
Roy's
like
fucking
glass.
Bottles, dude. He's like, been collecting them for years.
Those are like Campari bottles, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
20 years I'm collecting these things. He's very nice about he should have fucking smacked Jackie in the head.
He's got to be nice. That's the place where they wash money through. Like, he's got to fuck. He probably had a gambling debt, or his father had a gambling debt, and he's got to be nice. Otherwise, he would tell Jackie to like stay the fuck away from there.
Otherwise, he gets a pinky chopped off.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he ends up like Beansy. You know, I remember. You know, he's the other guy who owned a pizza place.
Oh man,
oh, Beansy.
Oh man, Roy. That was the Christmas when Roy fucking put a bullet in his head. Oh yeah, yeah. Fuck.
But then Chris walks in, and he's sort of like impressed with Jackie, and he's like, "If you ever think of jumping ship, you know my number." Yes, Ralph gets like the bull share of the blame for what happens to Jackie for sure. But is Chris sort of complicit here? Like, do you guys think in stoking the flames?
Sure. I mean, he reminds him of him probably. I mean, him and Brendan were doing the same fucking shit as Dino and Jackie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and also Chris has been told several times, I think by this point, by Tony to like leave Jackie Jr. the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's like, hey, here's my card. Fucking call me if you want to be in the mob.
He even says to Jackie, like, fuck Tony. Like, fuck him what he thinks. You gotta eat too.
Right.
Even says
that's true. Yeah. He's like, nobody has any right to tell anybody else how to make a living.
Yeah. So he knows he can use him basically. He's used him before.
Do you think part of it too is that like there's a natural competition between the two of them because they kind of are like, semi similar situations? Where they've been groomed-ish, and he doesn't like him kind of being around, even though Tony has tried to keep him out of the business. Like, he kind of almost wants him to, like, submit to his downfall because it'll help Chris in the long run, you know? Because Tony
is the heir apparent.
He's the heir apparent.
Possibly, yeah, possibly.
I don't know that Chris is consciously making that call, but...
No.
But yeah, I think more than anything, Chris just likes how Jackie sees him as like the fucking cool guy who's made it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Chris likes playing that part. I think that's why he like goes into the pizza parlor.
Yeah,
you know,
and they're bonded.
In a previous episode, he's like, I really can't be seen in a place like this anymore, and he still fucking goes in.
And
so.
they're bonded by the Jewel charity concert heist. So,
that's
you
true.
Know.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
It's like
yeah.
a great, it's like a great experience for them, and they shared that experience together.
What's your guys' take on the scene with Gloria driving Carmella home from Globe Motors?
I remember
that hit home for me a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, who hasn't, you know, had their significant other driven home by their gumas?
Oh yeah. Boy.
Yes, I mean yeah, it happens all
it's
the time.
It's the nightmare. I mean, it is the big nightmare. You never want
to. I mean, I will say this, and this is talk about an old relationship. I did at one point, I will never forget it. I was in a past life, I was a DJ for bar, and I had I may have had something, a little something going on, let's say on the side.
Sure. Okay.
And
my, long time ago.
This is many, many, many lifetimes ago, and my girlfriend at the time was at the bar, and then this other individual showed up, and started making small talk with my girlfriend. And it was one of those feelings that you will never forget. And
did she know that she was your girlfriend?
Oh, 100%.
Oh God,
dude. How did you react to that? What were you just like?
Honestly, yeah. I had a buddy of mine who would DJ sometimes on the side, and I was like, "You got to step in and finish the night for me." And I went and grabbed my girlfriend. I'm like, "We gotta go."
Yeah, good move.
And that was my very mature. I mean, I was like 19 at the time, so sure. This is literally a lifetime ago.
Is this on Long Island? Did you grow up on Long Island?
No, this was in the city. I grew up in Staten Island. Much better, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I almost mentioned that because most of our episodes start off, I ask the person where they're from, and Joe either has a story relating to going to Hofstra because they're from Long Island, or has a story about growing up in Staten Island, which is where
Joe's from. Yeah, I'm from Staten Island. I was born in Staten Island.
Yeah. So the girlfriend at the time was also from, we were both from Staten Island, and this other person was an outsider. So I don't know where she was from. She was from somewhere else, not Staten Island.
Dang.
Yeah. So this, like I said, this episode hits home for a lot of really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently.
Sure.
Yeah. We're gonna reveal. We're gonna keep peeling back layers here and see what else John's got up his sleeve. Now we got so then, I mean, first of all, Gloria seems like an insane person. She's driving a million miles per hour in the suburbs, and she's like forcing Carmella to I love how she makes Carmella say like, "Oh no, you know the Ivy League school, Columbia."
Yeah.
Like such a,
just like trolling her.
Such a move.
Yep.
Yeah.
The school,
that's a big no-no.
The school broadcasting.
School broadcasting. Then we got Jackie and Dino eating leftover pasta and talking about like, you know, how they're gonna fucking make their moves. This is like such a familiar scene to me. Like,
oh yeah,
like whatever leftover shit I had in the fridge, my mother had in the fridge, like high school, college, like just having friends and eating
waiting for like one split second of a movie where like a woman is half naked for like, you know.
Oh my god.
You're like, oh yeah.
Where they this where they were like getting high, right?
These guys are children. Well, no, I was going to say this is where Ralphie comes in and tells them about Feach's card game.
Right.
You know, he's like, me, Tony, your dad, like we were our own little crew. First of all, Ralphie, you were not fucking there. Like you were not involved in that crew. He is lying. Right. Am I right? Am I wrong?
Yeah. You really think he had the clap all that bad and he was like, kill me, my dick was dripping.
I could have up a card game.
I think he was involved in the crew, but like, was he involved in going to that thing? Never.
No way.
Yeah, I think he was like around and he knew those guys, but I don't think he was like close with them.
This was our real first insight into like who Ralphie really was, because I feel like before this episode you didn't get the full Ralphie yet, and then by the end you're like, there's something going on with this guy that's more, there's more than meets the eye here.
You're right.
When he says Jack spoiled him, like it makes me think that they were friends. Like they were all friends. It makes me think like they were friends to some degree.
Right. I think I don't think friends how Tony and Jack Senior were friends. I don't think Tony and Silver were friends.
Well, sure, not as much, but he was definitely like, you know,
he was around. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were probably involved in shit together, but I think especially for the heist the Feech Heist, I'm sure they were like, we can't have fucking Ralphie around because he's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Why do you think Ralphie told them that? I mean, do you think Ralphie knew what the hell he was doing by telling them the story? Maybe it's a silly question, but I don't know. I don't know.
No, I don't think that's silly at all, because yeah. I think there are some theories that Ralphie knew what he was doing. I think mostly he was just trying to look almost similar to Chris in the pizza parlor scene. Like, just trying to like look cool when like these guys are totally driven by ego. And when you have some like young kid who, you know, is like just looking up to you and like, you know, studying your every move and wants to be like you and wants your life, like a guy like Ralphie is going to wake up in the middle of the night and pretend he needs to go fucking whatever he does with the dishwasher just to tell that story to these kids. Cause he's like, you know, talking about his glory days here.
Yeah.
It makes clear how, you know, guys like, you know, Jackie Jr., these are pawns in this larger game, and those who don't realize they're pawns get, you know, what happens.
Yes.
And though, you know, you have to kind of real, you know, it really sets up kind of how this whole system works, right?
Right.
You know, it's just a bunch of guys out for themselves, and you got to figure out how to navigate it. It's
100%. I don't think he was like setting Jackie up to, I don't think he was like planting the idea of like, hey, go fucking stick up a card game. But I do think he was like, hey, maybe I like tease his interest a little bit, and down the line, he can be useful to me as a pawn, as you just said.
Yeah.
I think even if he does that subconsciously, I think that's what's going on here. Then we get the scene with Carm crying to a Pedigree commercial, which is
always love it.
Great commercial.
Great
commercial.
Oh my God, what's wrong with me?
Well, I mean, it sort of cheapens that moment in the beginning where she's looking at this beautiful painting of the baby Jesus, and then she's like equally bawling over a fucking dog food commercial. But I think that's the point, right?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of like,
yeah.
But then we get the scene where Tony and Gloria discover that her tires have been slashed. And she accuses Tony of knowing who did it. What do you guys think happened here?
I don't know.
I've never known. I mean, obviously it wasn't Tony. Like, I don't know. I like a part of you obviously is meant to feel like she did it herself to like create more drama between them.
That's,
you know,
that's actually probably true. That's actually, I wasn't even thinking this.
Oh, really?
That's always been
crossed my mind. I don't know though. That
I saw it as like three options. It was either Arena, because she had a history of doing it, as Tony said. Mm-hmm. It was just some fucking kids, because God knows I fucking trashed. I didn't slash tires, but I did some damage back in my fucking idiot high school days to some unsuspecting people with like lawn signs or like Christmas reindeer in their front lawn. But like, you know, when you're a kid, you do that kind of shit.
Sure.
Or it was Gloria herself, which would be a great way for her to set up like this dramatic end that we know she sort of craves.
Right.
Has anyone here slashed a tire?
No.
I personally have not.
I haven't.
How easy is that? Like, does it just explode in your face if you do it? Like, you know, fans of the pod, email us or send us a message on Instagram. Because I've, you know, wanted to slash a lot of people's tires, like, all the time. And I'm like, what would that, how
you're
easy
afraid it's going to explode in your face?
Because you know what? Because you know what the easiest thing is letting the air out. So why? Sure. And that's probably true. Just as annoying. So why the fuck? How easy is it to slash a tire, and why would you do it when you can just probably let the air out?
I guess because
a lot longer.
And also, like, if you just let the air out, then someone might be like, oh no, did I like hit a nail or something? Or, like,
right. Okay.
If you
sure.
slash it, it's like, oh fuck, someone hates me.
Someone also they can't patch that up.
Right.
That's like you're sending a message.
Quick story about Staten Island. I'm pretty sure that my parents' tires did get slashed on living in a house on Staten Island.
I think that's a rite of passage in Staten Island. Yeah. Your car door needs to get keyed, or your tires need to get slashed. Talk about an insane thought that I just had. The Basic Instinct with the you know, the clip from in the episode, which we didn't get to yet. At the end, there's the at the end of that movie, obviously, there's the reveal with the ice pick. couldn't they have figured out a way in this episode to work in a reveal with Gloria, like show Gloria has like a knife or something that she used to cut the tire? That would have been a nice little toss.
Right.
In. Yeah.
Right.
Bit heavy-handed though.
Yeah.
The handle of the knife says tire slashing knife.
Yes.
But I
think
you fucked up
intentionally. Man. Like, I think intentionally they leave it ambiguous, as,
sure.
as so much of The Sopranos is
for the best,
right?
But yeah, I mean, the very next scene is them smoking weed and
watching behind the music,
Basic Instinct. These fucking children watch it like the
are they the dumbest characters in the history of the show? I that's obviously a massive statement.
Yes, and
there's a lot of dumb characters.
I mean,
but I think,
really
I think,
stupid.
I think
Sean Gismonti is up there.
I think Sean
and Matt
and Matt are dumber.
Yeah, because they're also a little older.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you need to give Jackie and Dino a little more, especially like I think that the purpose of the Basic Instinct scene where they're like, you know, geeking out over Sharon Stone uncrossing her legs for a split second, like is just to show these two are fucking children. They are not the men that they want to depict themselves as. Because God knows, I fucking put on HBO late night, whatever, Taxi Cab Confessions back when I was yeah. like, you know, in high school or whatever, and fucking geek out over that. That's like such
Species
a,
2.
Oh.
oh.
Species 1. Why
Species
you got,
one?
Why, hey. Jump, why are you jumping over the original?
Yeah, you know what? You're right.
Back to back.
You're right.
Double feature.
Double yeah, feature. Yeah. But yeah, these two are obviously not men. And no. they're making childish decisions and paying adult consequences, I guess you could say.
. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Oh, 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. visiting Indeed each month, according to ComScore total visits. So it's clear Indeed can help you get the quality hire that you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is the best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
From there, we get to Carm at her confession scene with Father Obosi.
I was a huge fan of the movie Ghost Dog. I was probably like one of like three people that loved that movie. And this guy's in that too. He's such a fucking good actor.
Yeah, I didn't know where he was from.
He's is that his real accent? African. He's French speaking, but he's from like the Ivory Coast. But he's fucking great. Listeners, if you haven't watched Ghost Dog, I don't know if it holds up. But in college, I watched it religiously, and the soundtrack is all
like Method
Wu-Tang.
Man or something in that. Who else?
Well, Wu-Tang.
Forest Whitaker is
Forest
it, right?
Whitaker is the main guy, and
Wu-Tang did, and RZA did the sound, yeah. the soundtrack.
Yeah, and
there we go.
Some bangers on there, but
apparently the scene, like a bunch of religious people were up in arms because Father Obosi, his advice to Carmela was substandard, according to a lot of Catholic officials, I guess, when he tells her, you know, don't divorce Tony, which is the exact opposite of what Dr. Krakauer told her a few episodes ago.
Yeah, the fucking Jew.
The fucking Jew. He says, learn to live with the good part and forego those things that lay without it, which is quite convenient for Carmela, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Bury it. Just bury it.
Yeah, right. you sleep out, sleep it. Outside, sleep in a sleeping bag in the backyard, because you got to forego your house that the mob paid for.
I I'm thinking that between this and the AJ getting kept in school a few episodes prior, and Melfi taking the money, extra money from Soprano or from Tony, a lot of people making convenient choices in this couple of episodes stretch.
It's true. Although this episode, I just realized Melfi told Tony she's not charging him for this entire month of sessions because he paid extra.
Yep.
So because I thought the same thing, John. I was like, oh, she did make a little bit of moral compromise when she paid for her kid's books with the money Tony tipped her extra for God knows what. But like, but
finder's fee.
Yeah.
But yeah, it ends up, you know, she did the right thing. Melfi, what a stand-up,
moral compass of the show. Guy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Then we get Carm and Tony eating breakfast, where she tells Tony that Meadow and Jackie Jr. are finished. And that's when Gloria calls.
Yep.
And we get, I gotta say, Gandolfini milks everything he can out of the power of acting using eating honeycomb as a device. His slow chew as he realizes what's happening, like, is fucking masterful.
Yeah.
And made me want some honeycomb. And obviously he heads straight to Globe Motors, grabs her, puts her up against the wall. His hand is like fucking 80% of her face. It's so big. and tells her they're fucking over. Mm-hmm. And then we get another classic Renzulli line. Tuesday I can take my kid to Raffy.
That poor guy. He just wants to spend time with his kids.
John, you're a dad. Is Raffy still slap or kids not on Raffy?
Yeah, right.
Because Baby Beluga was heavy in the rotation when I was a little kid. I know that.
Man, that's I don't even know how to answer that.
I love that guy delivers that dumb line to with his back to camera.
It sounds like it's got to be ADR.
It's probably ADR. Yeah,
it's ADR. Yeah. They added that line in. They're like, probably Renzulli. Funny.
Yeah, probably.
They probably kept it open. They were like a ton of alts, and like David Chase was like, I guess this is the least stupid of all the shit you came up with,
or just not having a line anyway.
Yeah,
It really, that guy really does, because like when you first meet Gloria, there's this kind of allure about her because, you know, Mercedes like is still like, you know, she works at a car dealership, but it's Mercedes, right? So it's top of the line, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And this kind of really brings it home. Like, man, she's just selling cars with these schmucks.
She ain't shit. Yeah.
That's true. That's very true.
And then from there we get the Vesuvio scene with them discussing Hillary Clinton, which
so realistic. Like, this is like such a, like, because like I feel like so many women had this conversation in the tri-state area about Hillary Clinton. Like, my grandmother,
my mom had
her.
That conversation with, like, as a lot of young Italian men watching the show, like, if you're being honest, like, you know, you see your parents on screen, and like, my mom said all that shit about Hillary.
My mom, not a fan.
No, not so much.
But hey, they sort of use it to, Carmela uses it to help her feel better about staying with Tony, right? And I feel like that's ultimately what her storyline is here. It's like her trying to, like, she just wants to hear what she wants to hear so she can keep on living her life of luxury with her fucking ring and everything else. But
it's so on the money about like what Hillary did do for her career. And
it's true.
Look, she came very close to being the president of the United States. So,
Talk about forecasting, right? This was how many years, 15 years ahead of, you know?
Yeah.
Not
bad.
Yeah. Hey, not bad. Back at the Bing, we get Tony gets a call from Gloria on the phone. Annabella Sciorra does a great indecipherable hysterical crying, I gotta say.
Tony?
Yeah, do it for us, Joe.
It's just like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, moving on. Tony shows up at her place. And this is where they have it out. And this is like, I love this. I love this little exchange they have here.
The top five scene.
What's great about it to me is that, like, obviously they're trying to liken her to Livia as much as possible without being too on the nose about it.
Right.
And so when she says shit like, you know, I'll sit back like a mute while you screw everyone out there. Like, that's a line that Livia, not exactly, but earlier this season even. So like, I should have just stayed quiet like a mute is something Livia actually said in season one. And then it's a recycled line that they use for CGI Livia at the beginning of the season.
Oh yeah.
So it's kind of like a nice little bookend where like, and then of course the, poor you is what puts the nail on the head. Right.
Yeah.
But you have to, when the light bulb goes off for Tony, you have to have that realization with him. You can't have it before. That's so, like, even though it's on the head, like, right, it can't be too on, right?
Yeah. 100%. And that's why I think this is so fucking well done. Because if she starts saying things that Livia exactly said, it would be like, come on, really? But just
I gave
to show
you that Moroccan
she...
robe on a silver platter.
Right. So Tony's, when he's like, you know, I didn't just meet you, I've known you my whole fucking life, like, get chills. But that's what takes the scene into, you know, she's like, if you go, I'll call your wife, I'll go to Columbia, I'll tell your daughter about us. And that's where shit hits the fan.
Did you notice, by the way, after he closes the door, he locks it?
Oh, I didn't notice.
I did not notice.
Really?
I noticed it last. I don't think I ever noticed it before last. And I've seen this episode, I don't know how many times. I picked that up last night. Yeah.
That's what's great about the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so, ultimately.
Planning on possibly killing her.
Yeah.
That's, you know, for, you know, fans of Italian things on screen, like, you know, the Godfather 2, you know, Michael Corleone moment with the abortion scene. Like, this is James Gandolfini's his version of that moment for this.
Sure.
That's a great little parallel. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he only stopped. So here's the question, though. Do you think if he didn't also come to the realization that killing her is what Gloria wanted, that she would have gotten some sick sort of pleasure out of it, do you think he would have fucking gone that way?
I think, like, he, at least the way that Gandolfini plays it, it's like he's so taken aback by her wanting him to kill her that he's like, this is too fucked up.
I
think she, by screaming that at him, I think she, like, saved her life, ironically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So intense.
Yeah.
And then straight from there, we get to the card game heist, which is also intense. First of all,
yo, Matouche the driver.
Why the fuck are you driving for this guy? This guy got you your fucking ass beat.
I love it that he leaves too.
Yeah, he leaves. Oh,
that's great. Like,
oh. Why did I come here? No. Why did I?
Yeah, because, you know, Jackie was like, you owe me. You know, he's like, bro, I fucking, you know, I take care of you. And, like, probably talked him into it. And he's like, okay, all right.
yeah.
And then
I guess I'll
do
it.
What does Jackie suggest? Let's go down to the shore or something?
He's like, let's go down the shore. That's the whole thing. Like, these kids, these fucking children are scared.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't, and then Dino's like, you know, like, we better do it before the crank wears off. Like, if it wasn't for the drugs, if it wasn't for, you know, them gassing each other up, like, they would never do this solo. Like,
true.
This wouldn't happen. And there's that moment where Jackie could have saved his life, to be honest. Yeah. He could have gone down the shore.
It was the Vanilla Ice behind the music. They're like, oh, we don't want to end up like this fucking guy.
That's exactly what was running through his head.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I don't want to die with one fucking song.
Come on, think about that behind the music we watch. Are we going to end up like Vanilla Ice?
Hey, what do we learn from that behind the music?
Come on, man. Let's just do it before the crank wears off. Then we can watch all the behind the music we want.
They should have had Ninja Rap playing on the radio.
Ninja. Ninja. That should have been the closing song of the episode. That would
be great. Yeah, oh, which turtle is your favorite?
Yeah, they're playing Ninja Turtles. They
absolutely would have fit.
Oh, is my favorite part coming up? Like April O'Neil just popping out of the van.
They come into the card game with like size and nunchucks and shit.
No, David Chase. Van Morrison does a great cover of Ninja Rap. You have to use it.
Yeah. That's the only way we make it into an episode.
A lot of ninja rat scat.
So they barge in. Obviously, things don't go as planned. We got fucking Sunshine, who's the director, Paul, I should have written it down, Maransky or something like that.
Oh, wow.
I think he fucking kills it just in this small little bit as like the annoying guy just firing off like
fortune
philosophical.
Yeah.
Victory has 100 fathers, but defeat is an orphan. Bam.
He's been in other poker scenes, right?
Yes.
I think
yes.
So. Yeah. We've seen him before.
Yeah.
And of course, Furio ends up getting shot. Jackie carjacks somebody and Dino gets fucking two guns to the head. Not very sad about Dino's end, but you know, whatever. Then we get a little cameo from Dr. Ira Fried.
Great
the erectile dysfunction. He's the shooting an erectile dysfunction commercial.
Yep.
Get some great Furio cursing in Italian.
Yep.
Why? So, and then immediately after that, we get the classic scene of Chris coming to Tony. Saying like, I'm doing him tonight.
Yeah. You're a fucking hypocrite.
And Tony tells him no. Yeah. And Chris calls him. He is being a hypocrite. Yeah. You know, he's like, you preach all this wise guy shit. Meanwhile, the only guys you got to play by the rules are us.
But it's also saves Chris's life many times over, you know, until it doesn't.
Yes. Yeah.
Which he doesn't realize.
Right.
Maybe he does, but certainly not in this moment.
Yeah.
Why do you think Tony in this moment doesn't, because Chris has every right. He got shot at. He's a made guy. He has every right to go after Jackie.
It's his best friend's kid. You know?
His best friend
who he lost to cancer. Like, you know, it's not your typical whack. I mean, it's not like fucking Bevel Aqua.
Yeah, I agree, but also like almost in the very next scene, actually it is the very next scene with Ralph and Tony, he essentially gives Ralph a green light to fucking kill this kid, right?
Yeah,
so
but
why,
but he's
why
also,
was it that he didn't?
He's moved. He doesn't want to be the one to make the final.
Yeah,
call.
He's making Ralph do it.
It's a nice bit of maneuvering. It's as good a bit of maneuvering as Tony has, I think, in the
you're right.
In the show.
Yeah, I think actually he's protecting Chris here. And he's going on instinct because he's obviously both of them are fired up right now.
Also,
and
he wants to send like, he wants to send a guilt trip to Ralph when he you know by showing the gun that he took off of him, you know.
I mean, if somebody like murder obviously exposes them to, you know, all kinds of different charges and vulnerabilities, and so he probably doesn't want that for Chris, but he'll give that to Ralphie. He'll put that in Ralph's lap, right? Yeah. And that I love. That's maybe one of my favorite interactions in the entire series is the scene with Ralph and Tony, because it's
very
so
subtle.
Quintessential Sopranos, where it's like everything Tony says, you can read it as him being sincere with Ralph, or you could read it as him telling Ralph exactly what to do, why he should do it and how he should feel about it. Right. Cause he's like, you know, I think you should go with your instincts. And then he's like, you know, I'm sure you're going to do the right thing. That's why I made you captain. That's why all the guys will understand why you give him a pass. And when
also,
he says that, he's really saying, like, think about the other guys and what they're going to be saying about you and how you're going to be perceived, right?
Also, it's and like it's bottled rage from Tony because he's been spending all this fucking effort trying to make sure that Jackie stays on the right path. And all this time he's been undercut by Ralphie, fucking giving him a piece, fucking talking in his ear. You know, and he has to know that Ralphie had some hand in like pushing him to get to that place to rob the card game. Otherwise, Ralphie's insane. Otherwise, Ralphie would have been so much more pissed that his own card game got fucking held up, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It hands him the gun, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, and Tony tells him, like, you know, what the one thing you can't do is blame yourself. But he's saying, fucking blame yourself, you asshole. Yeah,
right.
You know, you took this kid under your wing. You schooled him best you could, didn't you? No, he fucking didn't. He gave him the gun. He shows Ralphie the gun that he gave Jackie Jr. and lets him know, like, this is what you got to do. And also, I think this is smart on Tony's part because he has to have, like, it has to be arranged so that if Meadow ever asks if he had anything to do with Jackie's death, he can say no, right?
Right.
Yeah. This conversation allows him to do that.
That's also a good point.
And there's also an interesting, you know, a couple of dots connected where, you know, Ralphie, if his story is to believe, you know, he chose not to go with Tony and Jackie Sr., you know, all those years ago, and now it leaves him left to clean up this mess.
That's a great point. I never thought about that. I mean, so he more or less gives Ralphie, he knows what decision Ralphie's going to make.
Yeah.
From there we get a Melfi Tony scene where he's like, she wanted me to fucking kill her, suicide by cop. Kind of crazy that, like, I feel like she a little bit like breaks the breach of or breaches like the doctor patient confidentiality thing, where
very much so. Yeah.
She's just had it, I think, at this point. I think this is as much as any moment for Melfi in the show where she's just like, you know what, these people, I'm gonna dish it to them a little bit.
Yeah, no, she definitely, like, at this point, it's been what, 3 years that they've been seeing each other, in therapy, and she's just dishing it to him straight at this point. She's like, you know, you're never gonna leave your wife. She might leave you. And I guess some people in the psychiatry world were up in arms about that as well, like that, like a therapist probably would never say that.
But I probably wouldn't.
Also, you know, at a certain point, I think, like, you see each other, it's more of like a human interaction and less of like a doctor patient interaction, right? Yeah. After 3 years of this, they have a certain way of talking and familiarity and whatever. Also, Tony said he's 40 fucking years old. What?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm 40 fucking years old. I'm like, fuck, you're 3 years older than me here? Are you kidding me?
It's not what you want.
I saw something recently that showed that his birthday, like, I don't know what it was, but I saw something on fucking Twitter or something that, like, they said his birthday was August 24th, 1959. So he'd be maybe 42 or something here.
But, like, Meadow is a freshman, right, here?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It adds up. I mean,
I mean, it makes sense. They had kids young.
I think we don't realize how fucking old we are now. That's the problem.
Thank you for that.
I mean, that's exactly it. Yeah. Cause I saw this when I was a fucking junior in high school for the first time.
You still sit around fucking smoking weed and watching Basic Instinct by yourself.
He could have said he was 40 years old, but really he's 42. You know,
you're right.
You know.
You're right. Okay. you're right. Ultimately, you know, she calls him out, you know, you're never going to leave your wife. Your own selfishness is too strong to let that happen. And he's like, all right, all right. She's like, actually, in spite of everything, you're a very conventional man. He's like, I said, all right.
Yeah.
What do you think he dislikes more, being called selfish or being confronted with the fact that he's selfish or being called a very conventional man?
Oh, conventional.
And then from there we get the classic Patsy's finest moment, I would argue.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Test drive with Gloria. He's like, it's got pep, I'll give it that. But you don't like me. You'll be scraping your nipples off these fine leather seats. It won't be cinematic.
That line is almost too smart, though, isn't it, for him?
Because
that's literally the thing he needed to say there.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, but also it just...
You're right. I
mean, it always fit for me.
I agree with you. I think it's too smart for him, but I still love it. I mean,
it's great. It's one of the greats. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, especially because like Tony's most recent interaction with her, like that's what he realizes, right? Like she's looking for this dramatic ending.
Right.
That's how she wants to go out, and she wants him to be the tool that ends her. And so like he could have relayed that to Patsy. It could have come out as it won't maybe. Be cinematic. Maybe. I don't know. These guys are film buffs. Some
say this to her. Say this to her. When you get the gun, when you get the gun to her breast, yeah, it won't be cinematic. And then kick her out of the car and drive off.
Patsy, yeah. Patsy writes then, it on his palm. He's like, it won't be
cinematic. Won't be cinematic. Don't forget to get the stuffed shells.
Yeah. That last scene with him I picked up the stuffed shells, just thought, made me think like that's Gullius like coming home from the grocery store during quarantine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I got the stuffed shells, Natalie.
Yeah. By the way, did you guys know that fucking Bob Dylan approached the Sopranos and was like, hey, I want to write a Dean Martin song specifically for the Sopranos, and he covered Return to Me. For the show?
You know, it is kind of weird, but also it's very on the nose with it. Like, he's such a weird dude. You know? Like, he like, requested a... Have you ever listened to his Christmas album? It's so fucking bizarre. And, like, he's known to do weird shit. And also, like, you know, like, Steve Van Zandt is associated with the show, obviously. And the show had such good fucking music, so... Not so crazy, but it is funny to imagine Bob Dylan watching The Sopranos on a Sunday night, like eating a tray of like ziti by himself. Yeah. I mean, that's funny.
Yeah, it is. And then we get Ralphie coming home to Ro. You know, he's got to set it up that Jackie Jr. has been dealing drugs or he's a coke addict or whatever. He's got to like cover his own ass here.
Poor fucking
Sharon
Ro,
Angela.
Oh, so she's good. So good.
Yeah.
And we got Carmella. We see her studying for her real estate exam, which is the first we see of that, which is sort of like a little story thread that goes to the end of the series for her. And Tony comes home and he sort of recognizes like, okay, I had my a mofo or whatever the fuck. And she's like, he's like, you know, you don't have these fucking Looney Tunes moods. What is it? Cause you exercise. Like he's realizing like Carmella is like the domestic sort of safe, comfortable, decision he made in his life that
old faithful
that he's appreciative of now. Yeah, exactly.
Which Melfi pointed out, like, you know, it's like it's 100%. The one, you know, good decision he's made in his life in regards to women.
Yeah. And Carmella has taken the ring off. She's like, it needs to be like resized or whatever. I don't think we ever see her wear it again for the rest of the series.
No.
So,
no.
So that's her like foregoing what lays without, per Father Obosi. But as we know, like she fucking has Tony buy her a spec house and everything else. So like she doesn't forego for long.
No.
Yeah. And that's, anything else you guys want to talk about this up?
I think we got it. I think we got it.
I think we got everything.
Yeah. Hello, football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take full advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. And don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Let's fucking move on internet? To fucking internet. This, of course, is a part of the show where we source questions, comments from across the internet. Today, it's all Reddit stuff and all about the episode. So this one from user None Righteous. Maybe I'm just a stunad, but what was the point of Carmella talking about her period and crying in the art museum with Meadow and Amor Fu? Was this hinting at her being pregnant?
What?
Yes.
Yes.
I love a lot of these. A lot of these are always just like, Yeah, dude. What the fuck?
None righteous. You're just a Stunad, okay?
Yeah, so, you're a Stunad.
So when Patsy talks about getting stuffed shells, what is that, pasta?
What is that for, like, dinner?
What's he gonna
eat? I've never heard of those before. So what's it stuffed with?
What, like stuffing, like in a pillow?
This one from user Tia Kiyuta. Don't know. Realization. I'm watching Amor Fu and Meadow reveals she and Jackie have broken up. Do you think she knows if she revealed he cheated on her, Tony might kill him? If so, I have more respect for her.
It's possible. No. Don't think so?
I don't think Meadow. No, not at all. She doesn't want Jackie to die. She doesn't want Jackie to be killed. I don't think she certainly doesn't want her father to murder him.
No, I thought, isn't that what they're asking? That, like, that's why she doesn't say it?
Well, no, she tells, like, she tells Carmela. So.
Not that he cheated on her, right?
Yeah, she just says they broke up.
I read it wrong. Yeah, okay.
I think this is just a teenager who is trying to give their parent the least information.
Yeah.
Possible.
This is true.
That's most likely. Yeah, she doesn't want Carm fucking. Sticking her
beak in. Okay. So in that case, hey, I'm the Stunad, okay? I read that wrong.
You Stunad.
This next one from user SwissWatch97. This is more of a comment. Amor Fu Mofo. In the episode Amor Fu, Tony mispronounces the phrase Amor Fu as Mofo. At first, I thought this was just a funny malapropism, but I remembered that Gloria is supposed to represent his mother. Tony says to Gloria, "We had our Mofo," meaning in his mind, we had our Mofu, but it could more literally be understood as we had our motherfucking. Tony is literally saying that his relationship with Gloria was motherfucking, even if he doesn't realize it.
Wow.
Okay.
That's good.
No, I like that.
That's great.
It sounds like they posted that on Reddit before the crank wore off, but okay. Cool. Great.
I mean, you guys don't think there's like subtleties written into shit like that? I think that's like Mofo is motherfucker. Wow. Right?
You always give way more credit to Renzulli than we do, you know.
Brilliant. It's possible. I don't know. That does seem a little heavy-handed though, if that is true.
I didn't pick up on it personally.
Right, and yet you don't pick up on it. But
yeah, how could it be heavy-handed if most people don't realize it?
I don't know.
I think it's a happy coincidence. The writers didn't know, but I think I like it. Sure. I kind of like how that works. This one from user Esme Shoma Chia. What the fuck are these names? Sunshine really punched his own ticket. Loaded shotgun pointed at his face during the card game robbery, warned to shut the fuck up, not only doesn't shut the fuck up, but preaches some annoying metaphorical bullshit that would set anyone off. Fuck, even I wanted him to get killed right there. He's weak and gunless. He's not a maid. He's not made, and he's no tough guy. He's only going to get himself killed by being a loudmouth. He didn't deserve to get killed. But Christ almighty, he was really asking for it. Any other moments where a character is basically suicidal like that in their behavior?
Yeah, in the same episode.
We just talked about it.
Yeah.
Esme, come on, man. I mean, there's many times where people run their mouths and end up fucking getting killed.
Yeah, I think you assume that you're probably safe. Not getting killed given like whose card game it is and whatnot, and the people that are playing at the game. I think you probably assume these kids aren't like don't have the balls enough to fucking kill them, but
right
and they do.
This next one from Rick MacD19. I always wondered why at the end of this episode they hold on Patsy for a long single take going about an everyday errand to end the episode. My first thought was showing the juxtaposition between the sociopath gangster and the everyman father slash husband, Patsy just having horrifically threatened Gloria in his previous scene. But I feel like by this point in the series, that idea has already been showcased and explored several times to much greater effect. Any thoughts? Why? See, the episode closes on that long shot of Patsy putting driving his groceries away. In the car and yeah. driving away.
Yeah.
And we linger. I when I first saw it, I'll tell you what I thought. I thought they lingered on his trunk because I thought like we were supposed to wonder if Gloria was in the back of his trunk.
Oh, wow.
Like shit oh, went wow. wrong. And I don't, and I never thought that that's what they were saying, but I thought that that was what they wanted us to wonder.
It's definitely something that they wanted us to wonder.
Yeah.
In the moment. But I think once you feel like, once we learn about what happens to her, like, yeah, that's, I think now just watching it, it's just like, this is a slice of life. Like, you know, oh, I'll go threaten some woman to kill her and then I'll go pick up groceries. I think that right. like that, that's yeah. what it was. I think that's yeah. what they were showing.
Yeah, totally. I think they've sort of made that point before, like the fucking regularness of life.
Yeah.
You know, the
all in a day's work.
Mundane. Yeah, right. exactly. Like, but it's built into the DNA of the show. So it's going to recur over and over again. You're going to see like these guys fucking going for groceries and then threatening to splatter a woman's nipples on her leather seats, like back to back. Cause that's yeah. the lives they're living.
Yeah.
There's many more times throughout the series where that juxtaposition is showcased.
Yeah.
So I don't know what Rick MacD's problem
they
is.
They could have killed, like they could have made it look like she killed herself. Right. When do we learn that she killed herself?
Next season.
Yeah.
Like what episode? I mean, I don't know how soon.
It's like episode 6 or
oh, so, yeah, Everybody then I don't Hurts. Think, then I don't think so. I feel like you would have known like sooner.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Possibly. That's all I got for fucking internet guys. So.
Oh, wow. Well,
good shit. Well, good shit. Great episode. John, thanks for coming on. Thank you for requesting an excellent episode with an excellent guest. You have stuff you want to push, John, to our listeners? I'm sure there's a bunch of Nick's
overlap.
People that yes, yeah,
well,
some overlap.
I mean, if you enjoy the musings of one David Futternick, he's going to be coming on my podcast pretty soon. I think
it's true.
Another spot on the Knicks Film School podcast. So yeah, if you want to hear me talk about basketball with a variety of people who know more about basketball than me, feel free to tune into that.
Hey, I got the over on the Knicks. Over.
Smart man. I like it. Barely, but I like it.
Somebody's got quickly fever, baby. I love it. John, thank you for coming on. And listeners, definitely check out Knicks Film School podcast and John's excellent newsletter as well if you're a Knicks fan. Thank you for listening. As always, you can hit us up at osopranospod@gmail.com. Questions, concerns, things you like, things you don't like. Also, give us a follow on Instagram and Twitter at osopranospod. Give us a 5-star review. That shit helps because there are other Sopranos podcasts that fucking suck. And we want you to fucking listen to our fucking Sopranos podcast because it's like better than all the other ones. Sorry, it just is. Everybody have a great Christmas. Happy holidays to everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Merry fucking Christmas. Fuck you, Santa. Till next time.
Oh.